Podcasters, assemble!
Hello, I am MC, and I am from Best Animated Shows Ever so far.
This is Tyler from the Too Young for This Hit podcast.
This is Becky, Troy's wife.
My name is Mike Lucas. Also known as Mike of All Trades.
Rob here, your friendly neighborhood comic geek.
This is Arjuna Gonzalez from Thoughts from the Level Editor.
Hey, this is Travis Bowe from Real Comic Heroes Podcast.
I'm Jason from at Drinkopedia Pod.
This is Troidal Power from the Power Playthroughs Podcast.
And this is...
Iron Man 1.
The big daddy of them all. The inaugural movie in the MCU that has lasted 11 years now.
This may be the best of the Marvel films as well as one of the best looking. And that is because it is one of the only films that was actually shot on film. The ones after this were shot on digital, which means the blacks never really are completely black. And the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe kind of has a very washed out tone until you get to like... Thor Ragnarok, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Man, what a fantastic movie. You know, you've seen a lot of Marvel origin movies. I think this movie is, first off, it's the first one, but it does it the best. You got Tony Stark, who's just the biggest jerk ever. He's this super arrogant, egotistical maniac, and then he gets humbled. I mean, that's one of the best Tony Stark moments of the entire MCU.
This kid raises his hand and says, "Hey, is it cool if I take a picture with you?" And he's like, "Yes, it's very cool." And then he's like, "And I don't want to see this on your MySpace page." And that made me laugh really hard because I forget that this movie was made in 2008, which was like peak of MySpace. And I loved MySpace, but it's funny because most people don't know what that is now or didn't ever use it. So like millennials. I don't know. It's funny to me.
He's trapped in a cave with a scientist, and they're still working on the Iron Man suit. Unbeknownst to the scientist that it's an Iron Man suit, you know, thinks it's something else, and they're trying to hide what they're actually doing. You know, they're still, so at this point in time in the movie, they're supposed to be building the Jericho weapon. For those who've never seen Iron Man before, the Jericho missile, I'm calling it a weapon because it is a weapon. The Jericho missile was a big cluster missile. You know, it was showcased in the beginning of the movie, you know, when he got in a fun V. And they shot it off. And that's how he got captured. They got blindsided. And so he's in this cave and he's supposed to be building this Jericho missile. But instead, he's literally building the schematics to the exoskeleton, you know, the exo armor Iron Man that we know and love as Iron Man today.
They've built this Mach 1 Iron Man suit as a way for them to escape from the cave, but they had limited resources to do so. So the suit takes a lot to actually get on, which I kind of like because later on it seems like he makes the suit way too easy to get on way too quickly. But in this scene, Yinsen's helping him get the suit all on, and then there's an operating system that has to boot up, and they realize that there's no way it's going to finish booting up by the time the guards come.
You know, you still need to boot up. We're gonna get you some time. So scientist goes out bravely with, you know what I'm saying, he gets a gun from one of the guards and sits and runs out and everything else.
And Yinsen runs out and uses his machine gun to chase away all the baddies, just stalling them long enough for Stark to get the suit powered up. And
Tony finally gets him the suit. The suit gets booted and everything, and it's, you know, it's what you expect from being inside of a cave with as little tech and look like they're programming off an old Apple II.
And then once Iron Man comes out, he finds Yinsen there laying all bloodied and he's telling him, "No, we had a plan. And Yinsen says, this was always the plan. And so it's like, it's this real sweet moment where it's clear that Yinsen knew he was never getting out of the cave. He was helping Tony to build the Iron Man suit because Tony was going to get out. Yinsen knew he wasn't going to.
And the first life, you know what I'm saying, that Tony actually runs into that's kind of significant to him, you know, dies.
Tony Stark escapes from the Ten Rings camp, and he's got those flamethrowers, and he's setting everybody on fire, and they're firing machine guns at him, but it doesn't do anything, and they, like, keep trying to throw heavier-duty stuff at him, but he's just, like, shrugging it off, and then he flies off as the whole thing just explodes in a giant ball of flames. That was really cool, and a great way to end that first chapter in the story.
When Tony Stark comes back from Afghanistan after being a prisoner, and he announces that he'll be shutting down the weapons manufacturing division of Stark Industries, because that's really important. If he was still doing that today, that would be crazy. Like, how are you going to be a hero and also create weapons of war? Like, that would just be crazy. Also, I feel like war is bad is a pretty good message for a hero to send.
Tony is walking out of his conference thing that he did, and he pats a man on the back and says, "Looking great, Hev." And man turns around, and it's Stan Lee in a bathrobe style, like Hugh Hefner. And it's real cute.
I think one of my favorite moments is when he's first getting suited up in his armor. And, you know, it's still silver. He's testing it out for the first time. I think that might be one of the best. It's not really an action scene because it's just him testing out his equipment and taking it. It's just a test flight.
That experience of, like, flight and, oh, man, I've done it. I'm a superhero now. I can basically do anything. The thrill of it all, I think, is kind of unrivaled in any other Marvel movie, too. Just, like, that exhilaration where in that suit with him, you know, we're flying through, poking through the Ferris wheel. Absolutely amazing.
And he has his robot helping him just in case anything catches on fire. And he flies through the roof and then falls back down and crashes to the ground, and he gets doused with fire extinguisher. And then he's on round two and he's like, okay, goes, "If you douse me again and I'm not on fire, I'm donating you to a city college." And then he continues to do his tests and does it perfectly. But then after he does it perfectly, the robot, like, kind of lifts up his arm just a little bit. I thought it was cute.
The first iconic suit up, the in the red and the gold outfit. It's pretty badass. He gets all the parts just attached to him by machines. I really like this. It's like right where that iconic suit that he has in all the other films comes from.
So the next real action scene then is Tony, you know, just after he's decided to go after the bad guys, take the fight to them.
When Tony Stark goes back to Afghanistan to rescue the village with his new Iron Man suit, and he just drops in, like, easily takes out all of the terrorists, and then just leaves. And they do some really cool, like, first-person view shots. It's an amazing scene.
You know, he swoops down, saves the day, and then destroys missile launchers, takes out all the bad guys, and then continues to wreak havoc after he's blasted out of the sky by tank fire. Has that awesome moment where he just looks down the barrel of this tank, shoots his missile, you know, straight down the barrel, and then, of course, walks away as it explodes. You know, that'll always be one of the top action scenes, or one of the coolest scenes in the Marvel Universe.
The best action scene has to be when Tony actually blows up the tank and then turns around and blows up the munitions that has been sold to the terrorists that were in a village not too far from where he was being kept.
And then even after that, you've got him versus the U.S. military as they're trying to figure out, you know, who went into their active war zone. And
after Tony goes on his first kind of mission to blow up weapons in the Middle East as Iron Man, He's flying away and gets a call from Rhodey, checking in on the situation. Rhodey's like, you know, we just noticed this get blown up. Do you have any tech in the area? Because we've noticed something in a no-fly zone and we're about to blow it out of the air. And you get this great chase scene where Tony is flying the Iron Man suit against a couple of Air Force jets. And I love this action scene because it's a cool mix of the chasing dynamics, but you also get a lot of the first person perspective. This is the kind of the first time you see Tony flying in like an action mode. He gets kind of a test flight scene earlier, but this is really him like flying as an action scene, and it's fantastic. But then you also have the really nice protocol of like the communication between the Air Force pilots and the home base where Rhodey's at and all this back and forth, eventually leading to them shooting a missile at Iron Man. He throws up flares and then grabs onto the bottom of one of the jets and calls Rhodey back and is like, don't blow it up, it's me. And he's like, I'm going to blow up your drone. He's like, it's not a drone, it's me, it's a suit.
That's a great, great bit where it's kind of punctuated by him, you know, rescuing a pilot who, you know, had to bail out, and then is also punctuated by a great little joke about it being a training exercise gone wrong.
Rhodey being like, what am I supposed to tell people? And he's like, oh, it's training exercise, right? That's the standard line, which of course then they do. They say it was all a training exercise.
It kind of makes the final fight between Obadiah and Tony kind of dull in comparison.
Right after his mission to Golmira, he's been shot, he's been, you know, banged up. Pepper finds him.
And he's getting out of the suit for the first time, and all the machines are taking the parts off, and he turns to Pepper and he says, I think the line is, you've seen me doing worse. Or you've caught me doing worse, I think it might actually be. That's probably my favorite line. It's just a little throwaway comedy line that happens between them.
She's, you know, concerned about bullet holes and him risking his life. And he has this moment where, you know, he tells her that he knows that he can do this thing and make a difference. You know, his life up till now has been about making weapons and destroying things, but he knows now that he can be a hero and not be a hero to make himself feel better. You know, he can be a hero to help.
My favorite villain moment is when Obadiah, his father's friend and who's been running the business, sort of tells Tony after he gets back from being captured by the terrorists that he's the one being blocking Tony from taking control back of his company.
The brief little interaction that Tony Stark has with Obadiah right after the party that Tony kind of crashes. You know, he's been presented with all this evidence that his company has been supplying weapons to the enemy, and he confronts Obadiah and, you know, asks him, are we selling weapons to the enemy, to terrorists? And it's just this little moment that Obadiah has where he kind of treats Tony like, just treats him like you're a fool if you don't realize that, you know, as a company, we have to do these things and deal under the table and sell to both sides. And it's perfectly wrapped in this moment of, you know, let's take a picture. You know, he's got this smile on his face as photographers are taking their picture, and Tony is still blindsided by this whole realization. But Obadiah is able to, you know, smile, make himself look, you know, look good for the press, who have no idea what they're talking about. I think it's just a nice little tease for the villainous acts that he'll get into later on.
You really get a full sense for how evil Obadiah Stane is in the scene where he meets with Raza, the leader of the Ten Rings. Raza's collected up the pieces of Tony's Mach 1 Iron Man suit and kind of has them all laid out in a tent. And Obadiah is there to meet with him. We find out here that Obadiah actually hired Raza and his men to abduct Tony Stark because he wanted them to abduct him and kill him so that Obadiah could take over the company. And then they tried to basically extract more money from him once they realized it was Stark. But what's cool about this scene as far as what it reveals for Obadiah as a villain is he shows up with a whole bunch of men, and Raza clearly is like, this is my home turf, I have the upper hand, you leave your men outside, takes him inside, they talk for a while, he shows him the Mach 1 suit.
He's talking to the leader in the camp, and he pulls out this little freaking noise synthesizer, something that just like it makes him like just deaf and paralyzes him.
And tells him that, don't worry, it'll only last 15 minutes, but you've got way bigger problems. And he walks out of the tent, and all of Raza's men are on the ground, hands behind their head, and Obadiah Stane's men have completely taken over. And he tells his men to pack up the suit, and then he says, all right, let's finish up here. And you hear guns going off, and it's pretty clear that basically he had this whole community wiped out. And I mean, granted, this community was not exactly nice people, but the disregard that Obadiah Stane had for ordering them all to their deaths was just like showed how like truly evil he was.
When Obadiah's team of engineers and scientists are trying to reverse engineer the suit that Tony creates, the Iron Man suit, and they're having difficulties making the power source, and the guy's like, the technology just, it doesn't exist. And then Obadiah just yells at him, I'm going to try and do this. Tony Stark was able to build this in a cave. With a box of scraps!
And then just this lowly nerd going, I'm not Tony Stark. I think one, that really establishes Obadiah Stane. And then two, I mean, nobody can be Tony Stark. That's fantastic.
And just how Jeff Bridges delivers that line, it's really amazing. Like, every other time I've seen Jeff Bridges in an interview or something, he's just always very, like, mellow. Seeing him that, like, angry and terrifying was like a really good acting moment.
Can we talk about the arc reactor thing real quick? how Pepper had to reach in and unplug his old reactor and plug in the new one, and like the goop and stuff all on her hands, and she pulls out the old one, and he's like, not too far, clip. And she's like, what's that? He's like, you just unplugged. She's like, yo, I'm probably gonna die. That was great.
Obadiah takes Tony Stark's heart reactor out, and he goes through his little monologue about how he's going to use it to set the balance of power straight again. You really think that just because you have an idea, it belongs to you? Your father, he helped give us the atomic bomb. Now what kind of world would it be today if he was as selfish as you?
You know, so he had like, so it was like literally 2 moments. Where he took out his competition, and then he thought he took out Tony at that point in time in his own house with pizza. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Not with the pizza there, but like took him out and left him for dead pretty much so he could power his own recreated Iron Man suit.
I like the relationship between those two. Like, it's this sort of, I don't know that Tony Stark is a classic nerd character, but it's sort of like a really cool version of the Dilbert versus pointy-haired boss rivalry. Granted, the pointy-haired boss is more incompetent than malicious, but I'm talking in this more general sense of there's this smart inventor type, and then there's a business type who's trying to use all of his knowledge and ingenuity for his own evil purposes, and I like that rivalry in a story.
That tease of Terrence Howard in the, I guess, the Mark II Iron Man suit, you know, the next time, baby. Like, just hearing that moment, you know, in theater for the first time, you know, you just know, oh, he's going to become War Machine. And the idea that this movie is setting up a War Machine, you know, not necessarily a spinoff, but, you know, they're already planning for the future of this franchise, you know, regardless of the Avengers of it all. And of course, the ultimate dangling thread, you know, is the post-credit scene with Nick Fury and the Avengers initiative, and how amazing it is that they had the foresight to plant those seeds. But the Rhodey War Machine, you know, bit was perfectly executed. Of course, Terrence Howard never got a chance to become the War Machine. You know, we're probably better off with a Don Cheadle as Rhodey, so I won't really get into all that, but just the leaving the audience with the hint of, you know, more Iron Man related adventures to come, I think is a great little moment.
Then there's like the beginning of the final battle with Obadiah, where you see the evil Iron Man clone suit for the first time, mostly. And that is like, they do a really good job of introducing it and showing how evil the guy piloting it is. And like, all, it's just like this really awesome CG sequence that really does stand up 11 years later. I liked it a lot.
Iron Man and Ironmonger are flying. They're fighting and they're flying higher and higher and higher into the sky.
You know, they're flying out, and you know, you see the brain of Tony Stark, you know, take over while they're in mid fight, and he's flying them all the way up past the atmosphere, and you know, he asks how did he compensate for the freezing in the suit.
And Ironmonger is bragging about his suit and how awesome it is and how much better it is than Iron Man's. And then Iron Man goes, yeah, so what are you going to do about the ice? And Ironmonger starts to ice up and immediately starts falling from the sky.
And he's like, what? And then his suit shorts out. Dynamo's suit shorts out, and he's just falling back to Earth.
And I thought that was, like, funny karma.
Well, with Wolf, you know, trying to lessen casualties and whatnot, you know, Tony, we slowly see, you know, Tony morph from being the playboy, the billionaire playboy philanthropist into, like, an actual hero, like, folding out in our eyes. And for me, that's a big thing because, you know, it's storytelling, you know? It's great storytelling in that fight. It's kind of like, you know, watching a good play or watching a good dance or if you know me, watching a good match in wrestling. It's storytelling going on during all this. And the story is becoming, while more that he's just fighting, it's more than he wants revenge. Then it's going from wanting revenge to stopping this guy to eventually getting to the point in this fight where he feels like he needs to sacrifice himself to save Pepper's life and to end this fight at the arc reactor. So it's one of those things that you wouldn't have necessarily expected from Tony Stark from the beginning of the movie, but just watching his growth as a character, like, you just, at the end of it, you're just kind of like, wow, the climax of that fight, you're in awe. The reporters are all there, and he's like, he's reading the cards that S.H.I.E.L.D., S.H.I.E.L.D., they're giving him, Coulson, Agent Coulson, they're giving him. And he's reading the cards. And she's like, excuse me, but do you really want us to think that? And he's like, I know it's hard for you to really believe, but trust me on this when I say, you know. And mind you, now this is the same reporter that's pressing him that at the beginning of the movie hooked up with Tony. And so she was already bitter because, you know, she felt some type of way. She woke up and he was gone, and she was in Jarvis's house, and Pepper Potts is handing her clothes, and And so she's the one pressing him about it. And he's just like, you know what? In the back of his mind, he just had this moment, had to be a moment of clarity where he's like, okay, let's just go with it and see what happens. I'm Tony freaking Stark.
Without a doubt, my favorite line of dialogue from this movie is at the very end where Tony Stark is at a press conference and he announces that
I'm Iron Man.
And then you hear da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And it's amazing because it's your cliffhanger. You know, it sets the tone for what I believe the MCU is comes where we've ended up at right now. You know?
I really like that they went that direction where Tony Stark is out in the open and he's not hiding some sort of secret identity. Just because it's so different. I don't know if I've ever seen any Marvel movie where that's the case. I'm interested to see where that goes in Iron Man 2.
I didn't see that coming. Like, the movie just ends. And I'm like, how are they going to resolve this? Like, he can't just... Everyone can't know he's Iron Man. That's not what superheroes do. Because before this, I had only seen, like, Daredevil, Spider-Man, all the DC movies. Because there were so few Marvel movies at the time. I just... never expected a superhero to reveal their identity like that. It was awesome.
So I saw The Avengers before watching this, so I know that Tony Stark, Iron Man, joins the Avengers. So it's kind of spoiled for me a little bit, but I'm interested to know what happens between now and that movie in Iron Man 2 and any other installments that happen to feature Iron Man. Also, what does it mean that Tony Stark is out in the open that he is Iron Man and he isn't trying to conceal it as a secret identity or something?
It's a standalone movie. It was planned to be, I think, a standalone movie. But I will say it's the first intro we have of Agent Phil Coulson.
You know, when you see the first appearance of Coulson, and he's like, you know, and he's like, Coulson comes in, just, I love Coulson as a character. Coulson's great. He's, you know, he's cool, he's calm, but he just seems like so bamf, like he's a bad AMFer, you know what I mean?
I don't think he knew, or Marvel knew, how much, like, how important he would be going forward into phase one, and just to see him, like, in his little baby steps is really great.
I especially like it now because I'm a really big fan of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. So the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. was established in the very beginning, I think that's really cool.
So my favorite dangling thread left in this movie is definitely Nick Fury popping up in the end. At the time, I didn't really know that much about the Avengers. I had no clue that they were making a Hulk movie, Captain America movie, and a Thor movie, and that they were all going to be connected. Yeah, that was no news to me. I don't know if that was well known before the movies came out, or that was a surprise to everyone.
And anybody who's like a comic fan, you were like, wait, what? Like, wait, we're going to get more than one movie? Because you got to think, before this, like, the only real, like, Marvel superhero movies were the Spider-Man movies, the Sam Raimi series at that point in time, and then Blade, which Blade's an amazing Marvel movie, you know? The Blade movie, and then I guess we're gonna count Howard the Duck too, right? I guess we're counting Howard the Duck.
In my mind at the time, I just like kind of always thought, like, when I see like Batman movies, like the next one, it was connected regardless of the fact that it wasn't. Or like when I saw Daredevil, I imagined it was connected to the Punisher movie and to Blade and everything. But yeah, this was apparently the first time it was actually happening.
The line Tony says, you know, I just finally know what I have to do. And in my heart, I know that it's right. That would just about work for any hero. You could put that line of dialogue in Superman, in Batman, in Spider-Man, you know, Captain America, it works. The line is, it doesn't only apply to Iron Man. It just perfectly sums up doing the heroic thing and being the hero. For a movie that, you know, you meet Tony Stark and he's a playboy, who sells weapons, you know, and has one night stands, you know, to do a 180 degree flip and be this character who deep down he knows, you know, he's learned how to do the right thing is, I think, a pretty significant moment.
The casting of Robert Downey Jr., I know that was literally like, I think it was Jon Favreau said, you have to hire Robert Downey Jr. or you don't have me as the director on this film. And it felt like a big risk to take. They wanted to go younger. They wanted to go, you know, with somebody they thought was going to be a bigger crowd pleaser, but the casting was perfect.
Yeah, there's a reason that Iron Man, it set up, it kicked off this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I think had it been another character, another actor, another lead actor, I don't think you could build this. I don't think you could build the MCU off of the Incredible Hulk. You know, it came out a few weeks later. But I don't think had it come out first, I don't think that Edward Norton as Banner was as charismatic as a Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. And I don't think it was, it obviously didn't play as well for general audiences. So this was the smart play to kick the whole thing off with Iron Man and really take a gamble with this, you know, honestly, a C-level Marvel hero. You know, he wasn't Spider-Man, he wasn't the X-Men, it was Iron Man. No one was clamoring for an Iron Man movie, but Marvel had to play with what they had, and what they had was Avengers characters. And, you know, it was a smart play to take a chance with Robert Downey Jr. and the character of Iron Man, and it clearly has paid off, and it still holds up as being one of the best Marvel movies and a really great comic book movie and a great movie. It's up there with the likes of Indiana Jones, just in terms of being a great crowd-pleasing adventure movie.
So I love Iron Man. I think it sits for both myself and the wife as maybe our favorite of all the MCU movies, and certainly the most rewatchable.
And then lastly, I watched this movie 11 years ago. I was 9 years old, and at the time, Iron Man was my favorite superhero, period. Seeing him on the big screen for the first time, pre-Disney, you know, this is Marvel's first endeavor at a major blockbuster summer film. Absolutely unrivaled. In terms of nostalgic value, it's an 11. Come on, Iron Man 1, it's the best, baby.
Podcasters Assembled Probably is a production of the We Can Make This Work Probably podcast network. This episode edited and produced by me, Troidal Power. Find more of our shows at probablywork.com and learn how to contribute to future episodes of Podcasters Assembled Probably by looking us up on Twitter as @castersassemble. Submissions are always open. Thank you to everyone who was able to contribute to this episode. Be sure to check the show notes for links to all the places you can find them online.
I am Iron Man.
podcasters assemble probably will return in The Incredible Hulk.
I love that Jeff Bridges is cast as the big bad villain of this movie, because I keep thinking of his character in The Big Lebowski, and I'm like, you were the dude! You were supposed to bring the room together, not tear it apart!
If you're a fan of this podcast
and want to see it continue,
help support us on Patreon,
where you can unlock tons of exclusive content,
including, but not limited to,
movie commentaries,
ad-free versions of our promo specials,
extended cuts,
early access to new episodes,
behind-the-scenes clips,
first access to merchandise,
blooper reels,
and even a chance to vote on what we cover next on our Podcasters Disassembled episodes.
Just head right on over to patreon.com/podcastersassemble.
That's patreon.com/podcastersassemble.
Link in the show notes.